this is how we advertise that this podcast is going to be super funny and people should stay and listen.
Is that what this first part's supposed to do? Is advertise?
It's supposed to draw people in. Right. Like they want to listen more.
Wow, we've
been swinging and missing on that one for years.
We set the bar exactly where it needs to be.
That's fair. Yeah. That's, all right. Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Joe Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Lisa McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
And if you've made it this far, we have a good show, I promise.
It only goes uphill from here.
We are still recording, so I guess I can't necessarily make that promise.
We have a good show, we think.
We hope, yes. You know, sometimes you don't bring the juice right away, you know?
Right.
But we'll get there.
Listen, man, I bring the juice every time.
Not this morning.
I've been throwing out gold. I don't know what you're talking about.
You've been saying, say something funny for the past 10 minutes.
I've been talking about Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. I want to know what kind of degree he has. How did he get
to an honorarium, all right?
Oh, okay. Right. That's all I wanted. I just wanted an answer.
He's not a medical doctor.
That's good. Yeah. Don't turn to Dr. Pepper for your medical advice.
Sure. That's why he's better than Mr. Pip.
Though. Yeah. If your last name was Pepper, you're like bound to become a doctor though, right? Like you got to get some sort of PhD if your last name is Pepper.
Like in real life.
No, like now. Like
in the soft drink world.
Right. I don't think I get it.
Like if now there's a family out there with the last name of Pepper, you're like that child has
one
to
of
get
us
a
has
doctor.
To be a doctor.
Yeah, somebody has to become Dr. Pepper. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Seems like a pediatrician.
Yeah.
No. I wouldn't necessarily, want to go to the cardiologist, Dr. Pepper.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, we'll just leave that.
I mean, I'm just saying. Like, at that point, maybe change your name.
Sure. What, how do you feel about, when your doctor has a name that's, weirdly specific to their specialty? That's always kind of
like give me an example.
If your dentist is Dr. Tooth,
Well, there's Dr. Brown, the proctologist.
Oh,
or,
sure.
Yeah,
I'm fine. I mean, whatever. People's names are people's names. Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow weathermen always have good weatherman names.
I think that's like destiny choosing them.
Right.
It's like you have been named for this position.
You are weatherman.
That's right.
People watch the weatherman. I just look at my phone.
These days.
I mean, I read Space City Weather sometimes, and those people are weather people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But I guess I don't watch
people
them.
Of weather.
Yeah, people of to all our people of weather listeners.
All right, let's move on. Yeah, we promised a good show, and we're already, under delivering.
Sorry, folks.
You promised.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. All right, Halloween is coming up.
Yeah.
It's like 2 months away.
Yeah, it's still coming up.
All right, fine.
And month.
This will release mid-September. So
okay,
people
so a month
be
and a half.
Be,
okay,
you know,
get ready for Halloween.
Yeah, it's costume picking time.
It is.
You
got to
start
true.
Thinking of your costume. You have a costume picked out?
I absolutely do not. My kids do, but I do
I
not.
Do, yeah.
Yeah.
You're way more into picking costumes than I am.
I do. I love costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably had your costume picked out in May.
My boys are old enough now. I like dressing up with them. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
But now they're kind of going in two different directions, so it becomes a little more complicated. So, but, how do you make that work? You got to do costume change in the middle of
sure. You got to figure it out.
I'm like Taylor Swift, you know.
So, or you're like Two-Face. You do half costume on each side.
That's an option, dude. At least you have a costume picked out.
So my husband and my daughter are doing, they're going to try and do a joint costume this year.
Okay.
One thing or where they're like just paired together?
Where they're paired together, very specifically.
And you got kicked out of the joint costume.
I didn't really opt into the joint costume. It's going to take a lot to actually pull this one off.
I didn't want to participate. That's
maybe mom just goes and has a Halloween drink by herself. That sounds great.
All right. Well, if you're unsure, if your listeners are like, I need to get my Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
Chipotle has you covered.
Excellent.
Oh, Chipotle. That was my first thought.
Yes.
They used to do a thing where if you dressed up like a burrito, you'd get a free burrito. Are they still doing that?
I think they do if you come as a costume. I don't think you get it free, but I think you get a discount.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it used to be free, right?
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah.
Man, inflation's killing everything.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chipotle has released a Halloween costume collection in partnership with Spirit Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. So you could dress up in a bodysuit to be a Chipotle napkin.
A Chipotle napkin?
That's correct.
Of all the items at Chipotle. Okay. All right.
I'll show you a photo here in a second.
Yeah.
A Chipotle fork.
Okay.
Are they distinct, the napkins and the forks?
The napkins say Chipotle on them.
Sure. They do.
The fork is just black.
Fork is.
A Chipotle water cup.
Okay. All right. And that at least has like dimension to it. So that makes it a little bit, you know, you're inside the
cup. A Chipotle burrito.
Sure. Okay,
that one's the only one that makes sense.
A Chipotle to-go bag.
That one also makes some sense.
They have like a pattern on the bag. They have like a little like an essay
it's
sometimes.
It's a Chipotle, doesn't it?
Like, who's reading that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if it's bigger on their costume, maybe maybe you'll be able to read the whole thing. Sorry. We got all choked up at the thought of a Chipotle costume.
Are you sad?
I'm just emotional.
Are these happy tears?
I don't know. Yeah. These are body suits. By the way.
Oh, good. Yeah, yikes. Very forgiving, right?
Yeah. So.
Like spandex bodysuits?
Yeah, spandex bodysuits.
Oh, boy.
So this isn't like I'm inside of a giant cup.
No. No. It's a bodysuit that has like H2O and like the Chipotle little like swirly thing. I'll show you a photo here. You know, there you go.
That's disturbing. Nope. I do not want those costumes. Do not Google
Olympic
this.
Swimmer bathing suits.
Or a luge contestant.
Yes.
So if the luge were sponsored by Chipotle,
you're right. That's what
the fork is just all black, by the way. It's just a black bodysuit.
Yeah, there's no like defining
like
fork
face
features
and everything.
To it.
Yeah.
All face. Yeah.
That's like when Kim Kardashian went to the Met Gala with just
I
a
definitely
ponytail
remember that.
Sticking out. You guys don't pay any attention.
I don't remember. Yeah. If I saw somebody in a black bodysuit at Halloween, I wouldn't think.
Chipotle fork.
That dude's a fork.
Obviously.
I would think murderer.
That dude is robbing somebody's house.
Yeah.
That dude is going to kill somebody tonight. Yeah. And I need to get away from here.
Right.
Or else it'll be me.
Yeah.
But in fairness, these other ones don't necessarily look less murdery.
Yeah.
No. All the faces are covered except for the burrito, right?
I think that's my choice. I think you could pull that little...
Let me see the burrito again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's just a silver bodysuit.
It does
with a label.
It does have a label on there. Yeah, I wonder could you personalize your label to your Chipotle burrito?
Sure, to your order. Yeah.
Why? Mm-hmm. Why the form fitting? Like it just looks like you're.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways for these costumes to have gone well, and none of these are it.
Like you're trying to be hot, but it's.
But you still want to be Chipotle.
Chipotle, are we sexualizing our burritos?
Is the Chipotle customer a customer that is into a form-fitting bodysuit?
I would think the opposite.
Yeah.
I mean.
I think there are some gym bros who like Chipotle because you get like a lot of protein.
Sure. Chipotle's not bad, right?
I'm getting really hungry, just side note, talking about Chipotle over and over again.
I think they're missing a real missed opportunity because I feel like the best thing on the Chipotle menu is the guacamole. And need to a Chipotle guac costume should be in this.
It would just be a green spandex suit. That's
The fork is just black. They cut the fork. That one is an easy one. Like get rid of that fork. Yeah.
Sure.
And I also think bag and napkin are basically giving me the exact same vibes. They both basically say just Chipotle across the
brown
chest.
And white. Yeah.
So you could cut those two.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know what you want to go with instead. Tortilla seems like, you know.
Yeah, but that's basically just white. That's the napkin.
You have the brown spots.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah. So it's
Hopefully one is not poorly placed on the spandex bodysuit.
Right, <sprinter. the> butt.
Yes. Or maybe ideally placed if you have, I'm sure this thing's hard to get off, if you have the bathroom.
Right. I'm going as a faux pas.
That's every day of my life is existing as a faux pas.
Well, if you're like, hey, if you want to pivot as your family, though.
It could be Chipotle.
It could be a Chipotle family, yeah. Which one of these would you wear if you had to wear one? Is the one?
Well, I mean, the black one's the most slimming.
that's what they say about black.
Yeah.
And if it's like late at night, you're like, you're just kind of an amorphous blob.
Just to hide in the bushes.
And
then
I feel like I could pretend like I dress up as something other than Chipotle.
Just an all black, I'm Peter Pan shadow.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm an inkblot. Like.
I'm a McDonald's fork, can't you tell?
McDonald's forks are white. You know, so
fine.
How do you know that?
Right, he doesn't. He's just making it up.
I've been to McDonald's, right? I'm a connoisseur of the fast foods, yes.
A Starbucks fork is black.
There you go. I'm a Starbucks fork.
Who gets a fork at Starbucks?
Sometimes I get a fork at Starbucks.
You could be a Starbucks straw.
What are you getting from Starbucks that it requires a fork?
I mean, have you never split something with somebody and been like,
what are you splitting?
Yeah, we don't split things. That's not how.
And what at Starbucks is splittable?
I mean, you can get
little
a muffin.
Sandwiches.
You can split a muffin.
Like a muffin.
Who eats a muffin with the fork?
So you split the muffin with the fork.
Right.
You eat it with a
knife.
Fork.
That's a knife's job is to split a muffin. Come on,
Starbucks
people.
Have knives?
Yes.
I don't know. I can't really explain now that I've said this why I've gotten a fork at Starbucks before. But it's just trust me.
They do have the pumpkin muffin back in season.
Oh my
that
gosh,
actually
it's
is a pretty
so
good.
Good.
Yeah,
I do like a pumpkin.
Oh
Yes, me too. Pumpkin pastries are delicious.
Need to stop talking about food.
Yeah.
Something else.
I think I would want to go if I have to pick one of these three.
You don't.
One of these five.
You don't. You can just. We can just move on.
I'm going water cup. I think it's the most obviously like okay. That's Chipotle, like because it has the Chipotle. Like,
it's white
logo.
Though.
Yeah,
like that's everything.
You
is out there.
You just can't spill it.
I mean, that's like.
All right.
You gotta wear white underwear.
That's that's fine. Yes.
Moving right along.
Oh, okay, what are you dressing up as?
I'm not.
You're gonna create your own.
Yeah.
Guacamole costume.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. It's gonna be it.
Wow. What a party pooper.
I know.
What a Chipotle pooper.
Everybody's a Chipotle pooper, all right? That's what happens.
Yeah. Give me a good 20 minutes.
Let's get into our main topic.
All right.
Politics.
Womp,
womp, womp. As time of recording.
Don't be so excited, guys.
There was a debate last night.
There was.
Yes.
One of the three of us watched it. Do you want to guess?
I think our listeners know.
Okay, Pastor David watched it.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least I did read some highlights.
There you go.
I feel like that's the same thing. Like,
yeah, I mean,
you know.
It's long, you know.
And I wanted to be happy.
Listen, you watched Lord of the Rings, which is like a 4-hour movie.
And that's good, though.
Right.
I don't disagree with that. But like, you can't say like a 90-minute debate is too long. Like,
well, I mean, again, everything could be, you know, the length of something is dependent on what it is, right?
Yeah.
You know, like a dental exam that takes 90 minutes is far too long.
Fair enough.
You know, so.
All right.
Like watching people argue with each other, I probably have an attention span of like 5 minutes.
It's not even fun arguing, right?
They're, right.
You know, like, it's...
like in public, I see a good argument going down. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, I'm paying attention for a few minutes. Moving on.
Yeah. Our 90-minute public argument is kind of sad at that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Something has gone awry.
You know, this.
You should have solved it by now.
Yeah. Or just left. Like, you just like, this is a relationship that no longer needs to be invested in.
Yeah, for arguing.
If you're doing
in
this
public,
for 90 minutes. In
for
public.
90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think it's just over.
Yeah.
You know, and that just is, you know, is what it is. All right, the party. Well, first, do you want to talk about the debate or do you want to get to our main topic?
Let's get to our main topic. I think the debate will.
The debate is watchable. You can find it on the internet.
Yeah.
We're speaking about this because of the debate last night.
Sure. This is from Patheos.
Okay.
The Party of Biblical Values is their headline.
Oh.
Biblical values know how to throw a party.
Let me tell you. Rager.
There's no bacon.
That's true. There's usually wine, though.
There's
so,
wine,
you know,
yeah.
And unleavened bread.
Sure. It's a good one.
Flatbread and wine.
There's no like ban on leavening in bread. Just on Passover, you can't have leavening in your bread.
That's one of the parties.
Well, that's true. That's
I like unleavened bread. A tortilla, yeah, you know, a pita.
There's real good good options out there for unleavened bread. Yeah.
I don't like matzah. It's like a big
it
cracker.
Is not the best option for
when I think unleavened bread, I, you know, matzah is not my thing.
Done better.
Yeah. Yeah, Patheos, we don't really use Patheos. This is not a friend of the podcast. You know?
Yeah, well, we know them.
Their headlines are usually terrible. I mean, this is a terrible headline. The Party of Biblical Values is a terrible headline.
Yeah.
It doesn't really want me to read it, but we're going to read it anyway. Vote. This is by James McGrath.
Okay.
Vote for the Party of Biblical Values. That's his
name.
Have you heard this?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. Not in this room, thankfully.
Yeah. Typically, when people are telling me to vote for the Party of Biblical Values.
Yes.
I know which party they're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and.
I mean, one party touts themselves as the party of biblical values.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's self-proclaimed that the Republican Party would try to identify as that label.
Yes. And he's, James McGrath here says, when I push back on their claim that one party is the party of biblical values, they assume that I'm a Democrat.
Yes.
Let's start here. Why do you think one party has decided to kind of co-opt the claim of biblical values? And is it accurate?
Why have they decided to do it? Because it has been effective. It's
right.
Like it has been a strategy through which many people have found an avenue to be heard in their voices and to align with their particular understanding of what biblical values means.
Yeah.
They've been able to push forward an agenda of what their understanding of what a Christian country should look like, right? So.
Yeah.
The Republican Party has found success in aligning themselves with a particular branch of Christianity that is supportive of this. And so the evangelical and more conservative Christian movements have aligned with that, and they've gotten support and success. So, you know, hey, if it's working, you know, I can't fault them for a winning strategy
on
one level, right?
Yeah. You know, we look kind of back through history. Kind of this would start late 70s-ish time frame.
Really takes off with Reagan, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and ultimately, that was kind of a desegregation time. Some Christian universities and schools kind of wanted to keep segregation in place. And Jimmy Carter, his policy was he was going to tax them. And they kind of struck a deal with Reagan, like, we'll kind of support you, don't tax us.
Yeah.
And that's and to get most Christians, especially Northern Christians, didn't really care about Southern segregation schools. And so kind of abortion became kind of the pivot point, rallying cry. You know, if we want to do a little history lesson, that's kind of like previous to that, Baptists and evangelicals didn't super care about abortion. Like, I'm not saying they didn't care at all, but it was a Catholic thing.
It was not the platform that it is now, for sure. Yeah.
And in fact, the SBC praises when Roe v. Wade was passed.
It did.
So, but
at that, at that time.
At that time.
Not now.
Not now. Yeah.
It's a crazy little history lesson.
Yeah,
isn't
but
it?
Yeah, but so that's kind of the birthplace of the moral majority. You know, the Christian right is kind of like right here. An alliance with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they ditched Jimmy Carter, the Baptist Sunday school teacher, to go with Ronald Reagan, the divorced
Hollywood.
Californian Hollywood actor. Yeah. You know, I'm not here to say Reagan is a good or bad president. I'm saying
interesting choice. That's what happened.
That was an interesting choice for the evangelical right to ditch the evangelical dude and go with the divorced Hollywood actor. Yeah.
No argument. That was
We're on board.
Also, none of us were like voting at that time. So
I was alive.
No big deal.
In a crib, I was like, you know, I'm a Jimmy Carter guy.
Right. Right.
me and JC.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, seems like a good dude. Maybe I've known again before my time president, but builds houses now.
Does,
and he's really old and still doing it.
Still getting out there.
Okay,
it's impressive.
Okay, so the starting point for any discussion of U.S. politics as it pertains to faith ought to be that no major party is likely to completely represent biblical values.
Yeah.
If they did, it would be a miracle.
I don't know if it would be a miracle. I don't think it would be a political party.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
And is that the point of a political party either, you know, or a political system?
No. I mean, you know, for all of our talk of being founded on Judeo-Christian values, right, the intention of the two-party system from our founding documents, right, is that is that people are able to choose between two often competing ideas for how a country should run, and neither of them were set up to fully represent any particular religious stance, right, because we were intended to be a government free from a particular religious stance, right, where people could exist in a variety of religious ideologies and come together on this unifying thought of being a country together. And so that the notion that the parties compete is intentional, right? We want them to have different opinions because not everybody has the right solution to every problem.
Yeah. In alignment. Yeah. And if we had more parties than just two, maybe one could be, we're the Biblical Values Party.
Sure.
That party probably would win.
And it probably wouldn't be fully Biblical Values Party, right?
Yeah.
Like,
And our author here is going to start off saying, like, Biblical Values is a slogan that not has, you know, that does not have unambiguous context. Because when you really read the Bible, you're going to see something. And that is, the values are not always consistent.
Sure.
And they're not always super well highlighted. I mean, like, sometimes the biblical authors are xenophobic and anti-outsiders. And sometimes they're incredibly inclusive towards outsiders. And sometimes there's room for retaliation with violence. And sometimes there's teaching against.
Yep.
And sometimes, you know, there is tremendous value on the marginalized and those on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually pretty consistent.
Yeah.
So,
As we've said in a couple of weeks ago, our episode on the poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So typically when we say there's a party of biblical values, it cannot truly capture the Bible's values, because the Bible's values sometimes change or in flux or in different places,
sure,
depending on our biblical author and also depending on the context that they're working within, how they're writing and who they're writing to. But yet, it seems a branch of kind of American Christianity has latched onto this idea.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, so you said it's politically advantageous. We kind of trace its roots back to this late 70s into Ronald Reagan's presidency. Why is that? Why do you think that stayed persistent? Like, why is that kind of the thing that we kind of still point to?
Mm.
And is it just abortion?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think abortion and gay marriage are probably the two, like, you know, what's the phrase that they threw out? The family values is kind of like the alternative to biblical values, right? I think in a lot of ways, it's a cry back to what they feel like was lost 30, 40, 50 years ago, right?
Right.
Through the general progression of society, there's a desire to go back to what once was, whether that's explicit, where we say, like, yeah, that's what we want, or it's just like, I have this sense of grief that things are changing and I don't understand how they're changing in the world. And so what all I know is to go back to what felt good, and what felt good is what was, right?
Sure.
I think there's a really strong pull for that in a lot of ways. It's the same thing, you know, for individual congregations, right? When you try out a new worship service and suddenly there's a really big pull to go back to the way worship used to be, right? Or you do a new ministry and you're like, no, we have to go back and do the things that we used to do rather than doing that, right? There's a grief that we don't always know how to express when the world around us shifts and changes, especially when things shift and change that have felt consistent for so long, right? I mean, in defense of people who have a concern around gay marriage, right? For several thousands of years, the church's teaching was fairly clear on homosexuality. And now, very rightly, I think, we have understood scripture differently and have come to a different place as a country and for many people as Christians.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, there's a grief of, but this has been the thing that's always been consistent in my life. And now that's different. And I don't know how to navigate that these new waters. And so I need to go either hold on to what I have, or I need to go back to what was, or, you know, there's a grief there we don't always know how to deal with.
I think that's a very nice way to look at it.
Thanks.
I think that that's a really generous way to view at least a piece of that issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think for me, I look at that and I see, like, well, it's a change in power dynamics for people, right? And, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago was a really good time to be a straight, white, wealthy Protestant man.
Sure.
You know, and that is shifting, you know?
Yeah.
That's, we're redistributing, I hope, at least a little bit. And that, I think, is unsettling for people that have traditionally been, have held that place, right? And it's, I think that there's a lot of pushback because of that. And I think it has less to do with the individual values than it does, or the individual topics. I'm not going to call them values, the individual topics that we're talking about here, than it does, like, just this general, like, I'm being displaced.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. I don't know. I think the reality is, you know, in American politics, and I think, you know, faith being kind of aligned with this, is once we kind of check a box at the, you know, whatever, on November, whatever, 6th.
At the polling place?
At the polling place, there you go. We have this tribalism that sets in that we made the right choice.
Yeah.
And that right choice, that means everybody else who did not vote for that person made the wrong choice.
Correct.
And we as kind of people have a hard time reconciling.
Sure.
Maybe I made the wrong choice. Like, or like, maybe I did that. Like, we have just, like, I think, I can't remember who said this. Maybe it's Mark Twain, who said, like, it's easier to con a person than to convince them that they've been conned, kind of a thing. Like,
it sounds like a Mark Twain thing to
say. Yeah. So, because, like, once we make a decision, we think that was the right one and I'm going to commit to it. So I think people have made a decision politically and now are retrofitting biblical values on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think, like, we're maybe, you know, that's what we want to do. You know, some interesting things, like, statistically, conservatives, you know, when I was growing up, Bill Clinton's sex scandal happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was told you could never vote for a man like that
because
of his infidelities and because moral leadership in America mattered.
Sure.
And that was a very consistent position that conservative Christianity held up until 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then if you look at polling data, like, it flips where morality and leadership no longer matters. Like went from, like, 80% of conservative Christians said it mattered down to 30%. And that was something that happened.
Mm-hmm.
They were about to vote, check a box for somebody that they felt was immoral.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so instead of saying, I'm doing this and I dislike doing this, they had to, like, change in a sense, right? Like, actually, I like doing this. Like, actually, this is the right choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not here to, I don't think Beyond Sunday is not a political podcast, so we're certainly not here to endorse anyone for president.
No.
But it is kind of something that happened interesting with aspects of faith, right? Like, this is, like, for a long time, morality and leadership mattered for conservative Christianity, and then all of a sudden it didn't.
Right.
And that's just like an interesting thing that happened, and we're navigating why or how we got here over the last 8 years is, you know, something we're trying to do.
Yeah. The reality, right, is that both parties have areas of their platforms that align with parts of the Bible better than the others, mm-hmm. right? Either party could try to make a claim that they're the biblical values party. In general, I would say that the Democratic Party has not highlighted that because they're trying to be a party that is not defined by a particular religious belief, right? They want to be a party that is broader than Christianity. And whereas the Republican Party seems to say, nope, we're good with being this, right? And it's not a comment on whether that's good or bad. That just seems to be the way that is. For us as people of faith, you know, the challenge comes in navigating these waters of how do my own biblical values inform how I make decisions about how I vote and who I choose and how that moves forward and how I react to a vote when I lose, right? I think those things are where the challenge really, the rubber meets the road, if you will, for mm-hmm. us as individuals.
And I think that attached to that, the challenge for, I think, Christians right now is what and when you read scripture, when you read Bible and you pray to God and you envision God agrees with everything I think politically mm-hmm. and every one of my political parties, you know, the political party I'm choosing to vote for, God agrees with them 100%.
Yeah.
I don't think you worship the God of the Bible anymore.
Yeah.
I think you now have, you know, come into a form of idolatry mm-hmm. where you're making God into your own image.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I always found this like this fascinating portion of the Bible. You know, Moses goes up the mountain, mm-hmm. he's getting the Ten Commandments, and the Israelites at the bottom say, Moses has been gone a long time. Yeah. We're done. And we're going to take
all
our
earrings.
Couple hours
at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was longer
like
than that.
Like a 90-minute debate. And they're like, ugh.
Jesus. Yeah, I can't do it. Yeah.
And they're going to take all our earrings and our gold necklaces, and we're going to melt them down, and we're going to make this statue of a cow.
Yeah.
And something interesting happens is Aaron, Moses' brother, points mm-hmm. to the statue of a cow, and he doesn't say this is some new god. He says, no, this is God. This is Yahweh mm-hmm. who led us out of Egypt.
Yep.
And it's an interesting form of idolatry. You know, most of the time when we see idolatry in the Bible, it's a different god than Yahweh. Mm-hmm. Here is turning Yahweh into mm-hmm. an idol.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is probably the most prevalent amongst American Christianity today, is we turn God into, you see the world how I see the world.
Yeah.
And trick ourselves into thinking, and therefore, I'm doing the Christian thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the mm-hmm. godly mm-hmm. thing by worshiping a God that looks exactly like me and thinks mm-hmm. exactly like me and does things in this world exactly like I would do them. And I think that is not the God that's presented in Scripture.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's fair.
Yeah. All right. So what do we do?
Mm. What do you do, Elise?
What do I do?
Yeah, what do you do?
You know, I think we have a tendency with this as well to... A thing that I have noticed is that whenever we do this, we build this worldview based on what we think God thinks in the Bible, right? It's always in a way that is most beneficial to us, right? Mm. The outcome of that is, oh, well, this definitely is the worldview that benefits me personally the most,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I've tried to do is step back from my policies and say, okay, what is, take me out of the equation here.
Yeah.
Like what I want out of the equation here. What is good for the most people? What is good for those who are marginalized? What is good for people who don't have as much of a voice as I do, maybe, you know, like that I think is kind of an interest. At a minimum, that's an interesting thought exercise mm-hmm, to put mm-hmm. yourself through and kind of identify areas of selfishness in your politics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think particularly for those of us who claim to follow Jesus, right? You know, because you could be Jewish and have a very different take on this if mm-hmm. you're only rooted in the Old Testament. But mm-hmm. as those of us who claim to follow Jesus, right, I think rooting our thoughts about the entire scripture through the lens of Jesus is really important, right? So mm-hmm. if you're going to read scripture and you want to read the Old Testament, there's lots of good stuff in the Old Testament. There's lots of important stuff in the Old Testament, but you have to read it through the lens of what did Jesus say, either about the Old Testament or what did Jesus just teach us, right? You can't read the Ten Commandments without reading them through the lens of the Beatitudes. You can't read the laws of Leviticus without reading it through the lens of, you know, the death and resurrection of Jesus. You have to have those things in mind. And so I think that's a really kind of more complicated step, but a good way to come at that is exactly what you're addressing, Elise, is right, is how do I look at this the way Jesus looked at it? Okay, we read the stories about Jesus. Jesus looked at the people who were marginalized, the people who were on the outskirts, right? The people who were rejected by the powerful, the people who were told they weren't allowed to be at the table, right? That's who Jesus was looking for. And so if those are the people that Jesus is looking for, how am I making decisions and voting for policies that support the people that Jesus looked for? And I'm not going to be able to do that perfectly.
Right.
Right. Because both parties are going to have places where they do that well and places where they don't do that well.
Right.
And you can make arguments on all of these issues, whether it's abortion or immigration or whatever that might be. You can make arguments from both sides that one party is better than another, but they're not all going to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then at some point you have to pray and you have to make a choice on faith. And what I think is maybe most important for us as Christians is to say, the next day you wake up and your party lost, okay, maybe I was wrong, but God still has something for me to do, right? Like, this doesn't mean I have to now go hate everybody who voted for this other person. This doesn't mean I have to go and say the election was rigged or tainted or whatever, right? Like, it can be, okay, this thing happened. Now how do I go and care for the people who Jesus is looking for? How do I, in my local congregation, my local community, I'll work towards these people, whether I agree with the person who's a president or not? How do I do this in my local community and make sure that that's revealing?
Yeah, it's a sad state of American Christianity if, like, the greatest change we can make in this world happens once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous.
So that is not the change for American Christianity to make, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's a sad thought.
Yes.
You know, like, that's the best thing we could do is once every 4 years, check a box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that, you know, what's difficult about the New Testament, you mentioned, in light of Jesus, we don't really have a Christian political figure that the Bible kind of lifts up and says, like, that's what it should look like. We have some political leaders in the Old Testament, most of whom are bad.
Yep.
And even the good ones still do bad things.
Sure.
They're hard to sometimes reconcile. But we don't get that. You know, Christianity, the story stops before that kind of becomes a thing. And so we have to, you know, I appreciate this. We do our best. We pray through it out with the recognition that not everything that my party, that the person I'm voting for, I 100% agree with, and not necessarily everything the person on the other side I'm voting against, I 100% disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to bring, what does love of my neighbor look like in this voting booth?
Yeah.
And I appreciate that that's what you mentioned, Elise. Like, you didn't necessarily use those words, but I think that that's what it looks like. What is love of
those
my neighbor?
Those are better words, so we'll go with those.
Yeah.
your words were great.
Right. Don't rewind, but I said that.
Yeah. And that just becomes hard. And even if you say, like, I'm going to vote for this person, I'm not quite sure that I'm answering the real question of what does love of my neighbor look like, there's good news, and that's you can do that in your community. That's far more impactful than maybe checking a box every 4 years.
Yeah.
And I hope that all Christians on the right and on the left want to love their neighbor.
Yeah.
And are seeking ways to do that beyond just voting.
Yeah. There was an article that I found this morning. This is an opinion piece written by a UCC pastor in Minnesota for the Brainerd Dispatch.
Oh,
give us a UCC. What is UCC?
Yeah, what
is
it?
UCC is a... what is it? Sorry.
United Church of Christ?
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Look at me. I got it.
I always accidentally throw Universalist, but that's a different one. Yeah. United Church of Christ is a UCC. But so this is a pastor up in Minnesota who was writing specifically an opinion piece about last night's debate. And he said this: as we reflect, it is worth considering what the candidates hold sacred. Do they prioritize the dignity of every person? Do they speak to a vision of the common good that includes everyone, especially those often left out? In the Gospels, Jesus speaks of caring for the least of these, Matthew 25:40, reminding us that how we treat the marginalized reflects our values. This powerful image compels us to ask, do the policies proposed honor the sacred worth of each person, especially those who struggle or are overlooked? And I found that to be a very helpful way to frame the question, right? And I think as important is what we do afterwards, but I think that's a helpful place to start with the question.
Yeah.
All right. So I think, one, don't say your party is the party of biblical values.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't.
Stop it. Yeah. Neither party needs to claim that.
No.
Agreed. And that's okay. Like, you know, it's okay for your party not to be the party of biblical values. Yes.
There's an ELCA Lutheran running for vice president. We're not suddenly saying the Democrats are the party of Lutherans. Like, yeah. This is not...
He's adorable, though. Can we get a moment for him?
Sidebar, yeah.
America's dad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he says cute stuff out there.
But, he does.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody does. You know, depending on your political platform, you like, you like. And you sure. don't like, you don't like.
Yeah,
so, you know,
that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And, you know, it's not going to get less contentious as we get closer to November.
That seems unlikely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just, you know, as even if your party cannot be the party of biblical values, how you respond to people on Facebook can be, right?
Yeah. Like you can be an individual.
You can extol that, you know, in your own values. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can choose kindness, right? Like, we can have conversation with one another in which we choose kindness and in which we think the best of our neighbor rather than immediately assuming that they are malicious and lying and trapping us or our party. Like, we can have relationships with people with whom we might think differently about immigration, right? Like, you don't all have to agree on how we handle immigration in order to have a conversation with one another and be civil with one another. You don't have to agree on how we handle poverty in this country in order to be civil with one another. We can have conversations in which we are kind to one another because at one level Jesus tells us to be kind, right?
Like, right.
It shouldn't be rocket science, but we can do that. Yeah.
All right. I think that's all we got.
That it?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, hey friends, if you enjoyed this episode, whew, man.
Wow.
There's something to you, and we appreciate that very much. But we would love to hear what you are thinking about as we enter this election season. If you want to hear more conversations about faith and politics, let us know. If you never want us to do this again, please let us know that too. We would gladly take that feedback. You can email all that to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.